good morning, or good afternoon. We're going to call this meeting to order. Please keep eating if you want to. Let's all stand. We have Lee Wilson, Lyon County, will lead us in our pledge, and then Judge Alexander, who is now with CAECO, will lead us in our prayer. Where's the flag? Oh, here we go.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Bow with me. Father, we come before you this day, Lord, just give you thanks for this day that you give us, Lord. We just thank you for this season that we're about to celebrate, which is the birth of your son, Jesus Christ, and hope that we don't ever forget what this season is really about, Lord. We thank you for sending him to earth, dying on the cross, and rising on that third day, Lord, so we have knowledge of eternal life to come, Lord. We ask that you bless everyone, the leaders in this room, the elected officials, and everyone that keep us safe, Lord. We ask that you go with the senators and the representatives, Lord, as they go into this session, as they do things to better this state. And, we ask that you bless the hands that prepared this food, and bless this food to nourish from our bodies, and to do something for you, Lord. We ask all these things in your name. We ask that you forgive us where we fail you. Amen.
Amen. Thank you both. Let's give the park staff a round of applause for the great meal and hospitality. Judge Humphreys even made them bring him a new table, so. And they were Johnny on the spot, too, so. All right. You should have received the minutes. I think they're on the table, too. Need a motion to approve the minutes. Have a motion, Judge McGee. Second by Judge Whitfield. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? All right. Mr. Lee Wilson with the financial report.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm sure you all have read over your financial reports in detail. As of November the 30th, we should be at 41.67% of the overall budget. Our actual expenditures reflect 37.64% of budgeted amounts. On the revenue side, 34% of the budgeted revenues have been accrued as of November the 30th, 2025. Mr. Chairman, if there are no additions or corrections, the financial report is submitted for approval.
Are there any questions? If not, is there a motion to approve? Yep. All right, need a second.
Second.
All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? All right, thank you. The monthly code of ethics report, there's nothing to report, which is always great. Moving on to our federal and state reports, we first have Ms. Morgan Alvey with Senator McConnell's office.
Good afternoon. It's always great to be with you. I've hated that I've missed this event the last couple of years. It just had hit when I've been on vacation, so I'm really happy that I could make it this year. This is one of my favorite events of the year. I think at our last meeting, it was the Monday of the week that the government shutdown finally ended, so I don't think at that time I had a for sure update, but thankfully that bill, that continuing resolution, did ultimately pass later that week, and the government reopened the details on that. The continuing resolution lasts now through January 30th, but also there were three full year appropriations bills that were attached to that CR. So legislative branch, agriculture, and Milcon VA were three of the annual 12 appropriations bills that were attached to that. So for those particular agencies or departments that fall under those bills, those are funded through the fiscal year through next September 30th. But the rest of the government is funded through January 30th. One item, though, that I want to point out, a couple projects that were contained in that Milcon VA bill that was attached were two really important projects for Fort Campbell that the senator was able to secure. One is $45 million for the construction of a new air traffic control tower. For those of you who are familiar with Fort Campbell, know how much that old tower needs to be replaced. So really happy we were able to secure that project for them. And there's also $11 million that was in that bill for planning and design of a new air trap or a new hangar space, which again, if you're familiar with Fort Campbell, that's also a big need. So just wanted to note those items. And really just want to thank you all and tell you how much I enjoy working with you all. Jason, you and your staff, it's a special relationship that I hope you know how much we enjoy working with you and your staff. So just thank you all. I hope you all have a great Christmas. As you all know, anytime our office can be of assistance, do not hesitate to reach out. Thank you.
Thank you, Morgan. Next, we have Mr. Jason Hassard with Senator Paul's office.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today on behalf of Senator Paul, and I'd like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and soon to be a new year. It's amazing how quickly the year goes by. I have just three things to mention for Senator Paul. I know the senator definitely stands out in the news a lot. He's kind of going his own way, but he's I probably sound like a broken record at a lot of our meetings over the years. He has always said that he will not vote for a bill that does not balance the budget. And with the current budget situation that just went through, you know, to keep the government open, the Republicans were asking for a $2 trillion overspending. The Democrats wanted $3.5 trillion. And Senator Paul was suggesting cutting it down just $1 trillion. And then he's always proposed a penny plan that over 5 years you spend one less penny on every federal dollar spent to pay down that other $1 trillion to balance the budget. And that's why he's been very adamant in his voting on the budget. On some other issues that he's working on moving into next year, the senator is very concerned that tobacco, especially here in Western Kentucky, has been cut by 40% in its acres planted in 2025. And the senator has been a proponent for hemp, industrial hemp production, and he was instrumental in passing that back in 2012. And he wants to make sure that remains a viable industry in our area. I know Lyon County has a hemp processor, and several farmers in Christian County are relying on that. Hemp produces $1,000 more an acre than tobacco, and tobacco is a very profitable crop. So Senator Paul wants to continue to support Western Kentucky farmers as they look for alternatives in their tobacco crop. There's a lot of talk about health care in the country. And Senator Paul is proposing legislation called a Healthcare Marketplace Act. And one of the concerns the senators had, especially as an eye surgeon, is the way we spend our healthcare dollars. And he thinks it's very important. It would bring healthcare costs down if we could sell healthcare plans nationwide, rather than having one policy for Kentucky and one for New York and one for Idaho, that it would be a nationwide plan. And he would like to see companies like Amazon or Costco or Sam's Club to be able to actually sell healthcare policies in a nationwide manner. So he will be putting that legislation out and trying to push for some changes. There's also just changes in, he's seen, you know, as a surgeon, things like if you go to the hospital, they might charge you $15 for like a cup of mouthwash if you're overnighting. You know, not the whole bottle, just a cup, but your insurance paid for it. So you think, okay, that's good. I don't have to worry about it. But that drives up the cost because no one questions it. So he really would like to find ways to just bring the overall cost down, but also make sure that people are covered in the health care they need. So thank you very much. And if anyone needs anything grant-wise, Rebecca on our staff is a full-time person looking at grants and supporting that. From Senator Paul, and also constituent services with passports and veterans medals and anything else. The Senator always wants to help. So thank you, and Merry Christmas again.
Thank you, Jason. Next up, we have Mr. Austin Witherington with Congressman Comer's office.
Well, thank you all for the opportunity to be here. Just want to quickly highlight Congressman Comer's visit to the Pennyroyal area. A few weeks ago, he had visited the Livingston County Hospital. With that, he announced a rather large USDA investment into the area, so we were very excited to make that announcement and wanted to congratulate Livingston County on that. He also was in Madisonville. Congressman Comer visited Madisonville and had good events there. He presented Mayor Cotton with a congressional record, honoring him for the Kentucky League of Cities Elected Official of the Year. And he also met with the Home Builders Association there and listened to some of the issues that they're having, federal issues that they are having. Like Morgan mentioned, I just wanted to highlight the three full year bill that was passed here. We wanted to congratulate Trigg County on that. Congressman Comer was able to secure $3 million for the Trigg County Hospital, so he was excited to see that be in its final passage. And of course, looking forward to working with Trigg County and getting that across the finish line. Just wanted to take a moment and thank the PAD staff as well for another great year, and Jason for another great year. And then wanted to also thank our legislators for being here today, and of course all the work you all do across the state and for the Pennyroyal region. But of course, if anything that we can do to be helpful, don't hesitate to reach out. Congressman Comer is glad to represent you all, and also if you ever have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Thank you all.
Thank you, Austin. Next up we have Ms. Catherine Marks with Congressman Brett Guthrie's office.
Merry Christmas, everyone. So nice to see everyone. So obviously with the longest government shutdown in history, Congressman Guthrie and the Energy and Commerce Committee, as well as the House, have been playing catch up. Some things they have gotten accomplished as far as bills voted on and passed that are specific to energy and commerce are mostly about America's energy, including the Refiner Act that would allow Congress to identify and tackle the challenges refineries face to keep America's energy affordable and reliable. Another is a domestic LNG Potentials Act. I won't go into details because I don't understand all of it. But both very important to keeping our energy affordable for everyone. As we know, that is very important to the committee currently. You will hopefully be seeing him a lot in the spring. He's going to try to get back to it and travel once they get caught up. As always, reach out to me if anyone needs anything from us. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Catherine. Next, we have Mr. Alex Caldell with the Governor's Office.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's always great to be back at Pennyroyal State Park. Appreciate all the wonderful staff here, especially Melissa and David, and all the great work they do. Lots of good memories here, and it's hard to believe we're coming up on the fourth anniversary of the tornadoes, and our state parks, of course, played such an important role helping our families after that. But Governor Beshear, he'll be in the Pennyroyal region tomorrow morning. 10 a.m., he'll be at the Toyota Bashuku ribbon cutting and grand opening, which is very exciting. Taylor, of course, for Hopkinsville and Christian County. And then after that, he'll be traveling to Princeton for a couple of more new home dedications for some of our tornado survivors. 4 years after the tornado, we continue to rebuild and move forward together. So did want to announce there was a Delta Regional Authority grant that came forth recently and was approved for the West Kentucky Workforce Board and the amount of $509,000 that I know Jason and Amy and the PAD staff worked hard on. So kudos to them and congratulations to our West Kentucky Workforce Board on all the good work they do. But on behalf of Commissioner Sawyers and Governor Beshear, we want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Next we have Greg Meredith with KYTC. Mr. Greg Meredith, sorry.
Good afternoon. Merry Christmas to you guys. I work with the Transportation Cabinet and Rural Municipal Aid. Work for Bobby Joe Lewis, the commissioner, who's doing a great job. Last week, as a matter of fact, the governor announced some more projects in the City-County Bridge Improvement Program. And it just so happens that about a third of that money that was allocated from this particular round came to the PAD area. So Crittenden County, Livingston County, and our friends there at Trigg County. So we're happy about that. We're happy about that program, what it means. Thank the legislators who helped put that together. I want you to know that it's been beneficial for counties and it helped replace bridges that they'd never have the funds and the money to replace. And so I see Denitra came in from District 2, Highway District 2, and of course Kyle Pote, who's working in Highway District 1 and does a great job as well. So thank you guys again and have a Merry Christmas. If you need me, please reach out. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Next, I'm going to turn it over to Jason Vincent for our legislative outlook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if I could ask all of our legislators to start making their way up here to these head tables. And I think, Amy, we're going to need one more chair. So if someone would just bring a chair with them, if you don't mind. Hey, this is a good problem to have, right? I don't think we've ever had to bring in extra seating for this event. So I do appreciate everyone being here today. And before, as they're coming up, in my opinion, Mayor Sewell, if you can't get into the Christmas spirit from being here, you can't get into Christmas spirit. And I know you've provided a lot of support to the park over the years. And let's just thank the park staff again with a round of applause. Representative Imes, you're brave sitting over here with this crew. I'm just telling you. Before we do get in our panel discussion, I did want to mention in your packets you will find the ad legislative priorities. You'll find various information about your all's infrastructure projects that have been prioritized by our committees, other regional projects through our chambers and through our community colleges, and all of these items that impact your all's organizations and our organization as well. So just wanted to point that out to you. Now we'll turn to our legislative update portion. And let me just first say thank you to each of these individuals that are up here with me now for joining us today. I've said it before, and I'll say it many, many, many times again. We are so fortunate to have the level of representation in Frankfort that we do, and I'm sure that you all would agree. So let's give them a round of applause, if you don't mind. With us today, we have Senator Danny Carroll, Senator Jason Howe, Senator Craig Richardson, Representative Jim Gooch, Representative Mary Beth Imes, Representative Chris Freeland, Representative Jim Gooch, and Representative Wade Williams. So again, thank you all for being with us today. Representative Walker Thomas. Sorry. Hey, you deserve to be mentioned twice. So, all right. Well, let's dig in, and we're going to start off with an easy one, okay? But with the upcoming legislative session focusing on the budget, what priorities do you see as most critical for the Pinerol region and other local rural communities that will come out, or that you hope to see come out of this session? And there is a microphone on each table, so whoever wants to get started, feel free.
Well, I never volunteered for something like that. You know, I think for the counties, the funding issues that we have and making sure that there is funding available for several different aspects of local government, having grant funding for economic development that might be coming to your areas, the transportation funding to make sure that you have money to repair your roads. I know that's something that we've been looking at, and looking at that entire process of determining the allocations and with the fuel, the revenue that comes in from fuel. We've kind of been stagnant in about 26 cents a gallon based on the formulas that we use now. And I know that there is some interest in maybe changing that system to put a CPI on that aspect of it and put like a 5% cap on it, which would generate additional revenue to send to local governments in forms of grants so you all could repair roads and infrastructure. So I think that's important, and just making sure with economic development, I know that's a key for a lot of you all, and I know tourism is a big deal for a lot of the counties within this district, and just to make sure we have the funding, and I think that needs to be the focus of investment for the legislature this year. It's going to be a much different session as far as the money that we have available, and we have to make sure that it's invested strategically, and there will be a very good return of investment as we go through that. So I really think that's what the focus will be, and making sure that we invest wisely and invest in our counties so that you all can make all those things happen.
Yeah. I'd like to address a couple of things with that. Senator Carroll mentioned most of them. But one of the things that
might need to hold that up.
Okay. One of the things that we want to continue to do is, I think at the first of the year, the income tax rate, I think, is supposed to come to 3%, which you, or 3.5%. And, yeah. So anyway, we are trying to cut that as much as we can. We feel like that we've met the trigger to do that. Some people may argue with that. So, but we do have a pretty hefty rainy day fund, and that's why we probably might be able to do some projects. But something that I want to mention to provide a little bit of perspective on. And that's health care and health insurance, because you know that really was the reason that the government shut down, the longest government shutdown in history. And the problem we have, most of those things are going to be determined in Washington, but they don't always do a very good job of actually solving problems. And what that started when Obamacare was passed, if you remember. Now, you know, we were told at that time that if you liked your health care plan, the one you had, you could keep it. If you liked your doctor, you could keep that doctor. And that the average family's health insurance premiums would probably go down about 34%. Well, folks, that was all gaslighting. None of it was true. It never happened. And so what really happened when that really occurred, majority of people in Kentucky got their health insurance two ways. Now, some people benefited. Of course, there were some people that couldn't maybe purchase insurance, and they needed to be have some mechanism where they could buy coverage. But what happened is the majority of people in Kentucky either got their health insurance through an expansion of Medicaid. They actually allowed that expansion. Governor Steve Beshear at the time made that expansion. I'm not personally sure that he really had the legal authority to do that, but we didn't challenge him on that as much as I think we should have. And so a lot of people got that expansion through Medicaid. And the others got their health insurance through the subsidies. Now, there was nothing wrong with maybe giving some subsidies for people to help buy their insurance, but those subsidies were supposed to sunset. No subsidy is supposed to last forever, because you're not solving the problem if a subsidy lasts forever. Well, then come along with COVID. When COVID came along, we saw the same thing happen again. They wanted people to have health insurance, and so current Governor Beshear expanded Medicaid again. And, of course, the federal government allowed that, but he took that option to expand Medicaid to the point that we have probably close to 30% of the population on Medicaid. Kentucky cannot sustain 30% of our population on Medicaid, which is pretty much free coverage. And then also the subsidies were sustained or carried over again. And again, those subsidies are supposed to have had sunsets, but they have never sunset. Now, I personally believe that we're going to have to do a little bit of maybe an expansion, possibly for a year, or phasing those out over some time. But if we don't do something, we are not solving the problem. We're not solving the affordability of health care, which is a very important problem. So I just wanted to lay that out there, that you know, part of the problem that we're being forced to maybe deal with are some things that really weren't something that we did. It was because Congress failed to act on solving the problem. And so I hope at some point we've got to kind of get a handle on those things. I've talked already too much about that already, but I think that so often we forget, it's been so long ago, we forget how this really happened and what was done to cause the problem. And then we think, well, we got to go ahead and expand the subsidies again. If we don't, people would suffer. There's no question about that. But we also have to look at the total affordability issue. It's not fair to the rest of the taxpayers to subsidize people who you know, are having issues as well, but have had issues for the last 10 to years or more. So. Anyone else?
I'll just add probably continuation of that. As looking at the budget and health care, I think we had our caucus meeting, and you know, I think we have talked about possibly this would be one of our toughest budget that we've had since 2018, simply because of the health care that we're looking at. Medicaid is a problem, not a problem, but it's an issue that we have to deal with, and it'll be our number two spend now, and that is increased. It's about doubled in less than 10 years. We're not talking about $1 million to $2 million or anything like that, but we're, you know, we're upper in the range of $5 billion, number two of our entire state budget. So if we don't do something, we're going to look at a bad shortfall. So we have to look at being creative on how we can adjust those things. And I'm sure you'll hear everything under the sun in the Courier Journal and everywhere else about all the things we're doing, but we have to adjust this to, or otherwise it's going to bankrupt the state. So I'll second that, what Jim said as well.
And that might be your all cell phones that are causing that feedback. I'm not sure, but if they're in your pocket close to the microphone, that might be what's causing that feedback. So just know that.
Thank you, Jason Howell, the first in the district. This is a budget year, and in light of that, for those of you who don't know, the budget starts in the House. So if any of the House members want to go first, you can have my spot, and then I'll go after you. It's easier to get your projects across the finish line if they start there. Just to follow up on a couple of things, one that Chair Gooch mentioned about the federal government not doing their job. They have some downstream approaches or problems as well. Part of the Big Beautiful Bill will fall out is about an $800 million hole in our Medicaid budget that's set to take place in about 3 years. And you should never speak for your friends, but I know these folks well enough to know they'll agree with me. If anybody has a solution to that, come see us afterwards. We'll name the bill after you. We'll probably take a grant and everything else. But in all seriousness, this has us very concerned about stepping out into the spending space in this budget cycle if we have to hedge against that in the future. So there's a couple things that you're going to see this year that you know, get played out in the press and other places with people that have their own particular axe to grind, is we do have a large budget surplus from a rainy day fund, but that's set in there to hedge against unforeseen costs by definition, and we're looking at that significantly in the next budget cycle if something doesn't change in Washington and they walk back some of the policies that are creating this hole. Because of that, I think in this session we'll see a pretty lean budget. And the things that I think that we should put in there, I think will be garnering some attention, and that's in infrastructure with additional funding for roads and bridges and water and sewer, the things that will have a return on investment, the things that we'll be obligated for anyway. that we have to address. I think that you'll see a lot of focus on those types of projects. It's not my phone. Yeah. So those are the types of things that I think that we'll see come to fruition. I do think we will look at addressing the issues with our funding for our roads and bridges. Nobody wants to pay more in tax. The way we have this set up doesn't work well. We are flatline funding for the same line that it was 6 or 7 years ago, and the price of competing in this environment for additional road money and for producing rain asphalt has gone up significantly. So as we work through that, we need y'all's support in there as well. None of us want to pay more, but go through the math, see how much it really costs you, and see how much that benefits the state down the line.
Anybody else on this side?
I'll mention something. Maybe we got the good mic over here.
Maybe so.
We turned ours off, but see, that works better. So, I did want to just mention, since Medicaid was mentioned quite a bit, that we actually have 14 counties that are 60% Medicaid recipients there. And then there's 54 counties that have over 40% Medicaid. So that is going to be a big issue. The good thing is our budget surplus fund is starting to creep up closer to a 60-day rainy day fund instead of 45, where we like to keep it. So there could be a little extra money, but you can see just from hearing from everyone that the expenses are already set, and some of them are coming down from the federal government that we're going to have to deal with.
Anybody else? We good? So staying on that same topic with the budget, jail cost. I know when I sent information out to our executive committee asking for topics, that was one thing that came firing back fairly quickly, was the jail topic. What legislative solutions do you all see are being considered to assist with that over this next session?
I hear very often from my county judge, also my husband, about the jail problems. Something has definitely got to be done. I know CAICO has introduced some regional jails, some incentivizing some of that regional jails, maybe making the time served, the time served already counted, so yep. They don't have to pay. The counties are out so much money in the for each inmate. They have to pay for their medicine, their food, and it's a whole lot more than what they are receiving.
Y'all go ahead and keep talking.
Yeah. And I think Mary Beth is right on that. It is probably a long-term issue to be solved. And it is something that we do need to look at the regional jails.
Sorry. Picking up Bluetooth signals. Yeah. All right, can y'all just talk loud?
Yeah, we can stand up.
Turn off your Bluetooth.
It's going to be with all of them. Don't worry about it.
Is that better? Yeah, just hold that right.
Can we just stay here?
Just unplug that.
In far west Kentucky, in Graves County and some of the surrounding counties there, they are looking at a regional facility And I don't think there's any question that those can be run more efficiently. And it wouldn't be that much of an inconvenience for the adjoining counties, but there are a lot of things to consider. And I know in more of my counties, McCracken has a regional jail there, and it's looking at Marshall County, they have a jail there. So, but I think it's more of a long-term issue where there's going to have to be an understanding and more discussions on pulling some of these jails together to serve as a regional jail. And that's where the savings that will come in. And I think it was House Bill 35 where it was addressing maybe paying from the first day that an inmate is in a county jail and making those reimbursements, streamlining that process. And I think that would help out also. But I know these discussions are ongoing. We had discussions about this at the caucus retreat that we just had, and there is not a simple solution to it. And I think the most immediate issue would be enhanced rates to help you all cover some of the costs.
Anybody else down here want to talk about that before I?
I think everyone's good.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, I agree that even regional jails, though, there are cost savings, but when you look at the fact that we don't pay for a state prisoner until we don't pay for state prisoners until after conviction. And I think that's a problem, that when somebody comes into a county jail, all their medical whatever is paid for, and that's a real problem as well. One of the things I'm looking at is that we have situations where some county jails accept state prisoners, and for years they've been able to pay, in many cases, for the jail because of the money that they made from housing state prisoners. But those seem to be going down, and there's a problem there. But I feel like that if you have a county jail and your county's having to transfer $200,000 to your jail because you can't meet your needs to housing state prisoners, then if you're not looking at housing federal prisoners, you're not looking at housing ICE prisoners, then as far as I'm concerned, you're not doing your job. And I'm going to be looking at some legislation that might even suggest that. And of course, legislation can be more than suggested. But but anyway, I think those are some problems that we really do need to solve.
Okay. Anybody else on the jail?
I'll take
it. Okay.
One thing that has been talked around in this, but needs to be talked about directly, I think, is, there's a saying, if you do what you always done, you get what you always got. And that's part of the issue we have, not just with jails, with a lot of things we're dealing with the state. And there are a lot of things being talked about, and I think that a lot of them have merit. But the simple fact is, not any one or two things is going to fix this. A lot of our issues don't have a silver bullet answer, and we're going to have to do a number of things to be able to work on things like jails. It may be that we have to fund public defenders more, which isn't very politically popular. I've heard some people talk about doing away with the entire position of jailer and moving that under the sheriff's department or under fiscal court, just to streamline all of this. There's a number of things that have been talked about that may have some merit, but if it affects one of our particular sacred cows that we like to protect, then it becomes politically unpopular, and we have to work through those issues, and we're going to need the support of people like all of you that are in this room to be able to work through some of these issues if they have some politically unpopular impacts in some of our areas.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right, well, let's move on to the next topic. And let's talk about senior meals for a second. And I don't believe there's anybody in this room who doesn't understand the importance of the senior meal program, especially after the past several months. And in fact, I do want to thank everybody for their laser-like focus for finding a solution. I'm talking about our legislators. I'm talking about the governor's office. I'm talking about our board. I'm talking about our staff. We were in a spot, but now we do find ourselves in a better spot. And just so you all know, our goal as the Ad Network is to present the legislature with options for levels of funding. For example, what would it cost to fund the program at our current levels? Not adding anybody else, but just funding at our current levels. Secondly, what would it cost if we were looking at funding the entire program and adding folks? As of today, Amanda, I think we have about 208 on our waiting list that waiting list has formed since September the 8th when we stopped taking individuals on the program. So I guess my question is, are there any conversations or plans that you all might be able to share with us today that might be looking to address this topic in the next session? Anybody want to take that?
I'm not sure if there's any plans yet in A&R. I actually sit on the committee, so I haven't heard of any yet, but hopefully this is funding that we can push that way. I know when this crisis hit and they said that the funding was going to end, I called Stan and Sissy and down in Trigg County and actually rode routes with some of these individuals that are delivering these foods, these Meals on Wheels, and there wasn't a soul out there that I didn't see that couldn't use the what we're doing. And I just think it's so important to our communities. I know one lady, she was bundled up on her couch in blankets because it was cold in her trailer. And the next time, I went on a Friday, the next time someone was going to check on her was Wayne, who was going to deliver her meal on Monday. And that was the next time someone was going to actually check to even make sure she's okay. So it's an important topic. I'm going to advocate for anything I can to see if we can get some money in the budget for that. So.
Anybody else?
I had the opportunity. I sit on the Legislative Oversight and Investigations Committee. And first of all, I want to thank you all because you all are responsible for this issue being brought forward and it being addressed. And those of you who had the opportunity to watch that committee meeting, I think you saw, and I'm not going to be too critical of the executive branch, but they absolutely dropped the ball on this. We go from the month before where you all are being encouraged to bring people into this program, and then all of a sudden we're out of money. And a month after the crisis had been identified, nothing had been done to alleviate it. And then after the LOIC meeting, there were some steps made and taken, and there was some funding that was found on some research that the executive branch was supposed to do, that they were directed to do, that they didn't do. So they used that funding to cover the loss. But I hope that shows you all that this is a critical issue and that we do need to take care of our seniors. And I think had we had proper figures, but we asked the executive branch, I think it was maybe you all had asked for $15 million, and we approved $10 million, which is what the executive branch asked for. So the estimates, the numbers were just completely out of whack from day one and completely mismanaged. No question about it, that entire program was mismanaged last year. And we're going to make sure that we have the correct numbers and look at the funding and find the proper balance in that to make sure that we don't run across this issue again. It's difficult when you get calls from your secretary and they're getting calls from seniors crying, wondering where their next meal is going to come from. And if we can't take care of that basic service with the most vulnerable population, some of the, you all know better than I do, some of these folks, they don't have anybody else to turn to. And without that assistance, they don't eat. So that's just unacceptable. And I feel certain that the legislative branch will take steps to ensure that something like that doesn't happen again.
Anybody else? I just want to say, probably as you all are bombarded with information about this program, one thing that you are going to learn is that every ad does it differently. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because every ad does it that meets the needs of their seniors. In our region, our board has always said, we want to make sure that we continue the hot home-delivered meals daily. And I think you talked to that about the need of that continued visit, just to make sure they're okay, plus having that meal. There are other regions that go strictly with frozen meal delivery, where those meals are delivered maybe every 14 days, and then they have to prepare the frozen meal again. And that might be a cheaper way of doing it. However, they're not getting that daily impact, that daily visit of someone seeing them. So just know that as you all start gathering information about these programs, that you're going to start see a lot of different ways that it's being done across the state, because you can't necessarily do it the same way here in West Kentucky as you do it in Louisville, or the same way, obviously, that you do it in a very mountainous area over in East Kentucky. So, like I said, just bear with us as we're getting additional information to us, and feel free to reach out and ask questions as you all are going through that. One thing that I've been asked to touch on are the regional driver's license offices. We know that has created some challenges since that has come to fruition. Is there anything that you all can talk about that maybe the legislature is looking to do to address any of the concerns with the driver's license offices?
And I don't want to do all the talking. I hate to talk until I get started, and then it's hard to shut me up. I know in the Senate we're looking at a piece of legislation that would allow you would still have to go to the regional office to get your driver's license, but set up a system that would allow the local offices to do the renewals. And in order for that to happen, you would have to pay like a $25 fee, but that might save you from having to drive several miles to get the renewal. So this was talked about during our caucus retreat. There are still a lot of things you would have to work out with that, but that might be a viable option that would alleviate some of the issues that we have. So, but keep in mind, this is an idea, and I don't know that it's been 100% vetted yet, but it's I think it's a good enough idea that we need to try to vet it and to talk with our clerks and see if it is something feasible that we could do. And it would help your residents in the long run. It might cost a little more, but you weigh that, the time that they would have to put in and the cost to drive to wherever the closest regional outlet is. So that's one thing that we're looking at.
Anybody else? Yeah.
One thing that I talked to a person about who does the skills test is we have a shortage of people to do the skills test. And as we had added the younger drivers this last session, they had talked about working with our local schools, our high schools, who maybe have like a bus garage, and maybe having some of those folks learn how to do the skills test, and at least allowing them to maybe work with testing our local high school students.
Okay.
Can I say one thing? Whatever we do, we need to come up with a high quality driver's license. Now, I've got one here that you can't even see. I mean, it's just so. I'll confess here, but I was in another state a year or so ago when I'd gotten mine. And went into a casino, which I wasn't going to spend any money there, I promise. I went into, and they wouldn't even scan. These things are so bad. So whatever we do, let's come up with at least a better quality product. Thank you.
Hey, Jason. I was hoping you were going to tell some more stories. I didn't know.
No, that's just hard to go. His wallet out. He's agreed to pay for a minute.
All right.
He's going to pick it up.
Anybody else? All right. Well, we're moving along pretty good here. Just a couple of more things. Local governments have been reporting, and I'm not talking about our media here, please understand, but have been reporting a surge in maybe broad or burdensome open records requests, sometimes by third-party folks that are not even here in the state. Or groups not even here in the state. Has there been any talk within the legislature, obviously, to continue to maintain transparency, as I know that is very important, but is anything being talked about maybe to help with some of those overburdensome requests that are being made? anybody hearing anything on that?
Yeah, while the media's here, I'll just report this. It's important to know that the way social media has now influenced everyone's opinion, that they have the First Amendment right to have, you are also not shielded from the consequences that creates. So while you want transparency for your government, and I'm all for that, you are also costing your government money. So out of one side of your mouth, when you ask for, I want to know where the money's going, you just cost it money. One thing our school district does, they had hundreds on it. I think it was in 2024, our school superintendent could record hundreds of requests each week. So now they open up each meeting talking about how much those requests just cost the school district. The requests have gone down. Because there were people bragging about how many requests they had put out there. And those people got quiet pretty quick. So I think we have this balancing act that we have to take into consideration of while there is a freedom to have those requests and demand transparency and accountability to your government and its government officials, which all of us up here support, you also have to own the responsibility of the cost and burden that that creates. So I would encourage that when those requests are made, they're made with good intent and an intent to do something about it if that information is received, not just to have a gotcha for your likes and clicks on social media, which you have the right to do, but you're not shielded from the consequences that that can create.
Thank you.
Let me say.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that we're concerned about in the legislature is that, you know, when we try to tighten it up, it might be, we might be opening something else up. We do know that we've had a hard time in the legislature convincing the courts, and we've been able to do it so far, that if, as you, as my constituent, you have a right to email me or call me on my cell phone or catch me on the street, and what you talk to me about should not be a part of public record. It just shouldn't be, because you elected me, and so you have the right to talk to me and make requests. I'm not sure how long that's going to hold up in the court system. But I do know, personally, I had my brother was mayor a few years ago at Providence, and they had an employee that had gotten, didn't get a promotion or something, and the next thing they know, they kept getting open records requests that pertain to records on the clock, all kinds of stuff, and they kept on until it got so bad that finally they said, hey, you are just harassing us. And when they finally refused to do any more, they stopped. But now that's not going to work all the time, but we know it is happening. It's a form of harassment, it's just something that could change in the courts at any time. We have, in just my opinion, a Supreme Court that's a little bit more on the activist side, and I'm not sure how long they will continue to grant you and I, as my constituent, the ability to text and talk and that not be open to public records.
Anybody else? All right, last question. I've asked you all questions about several topics, but does anybody want to speak on, and you may have already done so just in some of the questions I've asked, but anybody want to speak on any priorities that you all have individually for the upcoming session, maybe outside of the budget?
Those of you who know me know exactly what I'm going to talk about, and that's nuclear energy. I've had the opportunity since I've been in the legislature to spend hundreds and hundreds of hours at conferences and doing research on nuclear energy, and you all know that I've carried several pieces of legislation that have got us where we are, and working with various members, especially Representative Bridges and Floor Leader Rudy in the House. Suzanne Miles has also worked with us on that, and we've had a lot of support with that. And Kentucky is taking a leading role in this country on the advancement of nuclear energy. And for us, you all know what's going on in Paducah, and I don't want to focus on that too much, but we've kind of been the hub of the development to this point, with two different businesses coming in that will enrich uranium, and this could create hundreds of jobs. Very excited about that. A data center that we're in the running for that likely will eventually be powered with the nuclear reactor. The Kentucky Nuclear Energy Development Authority, NEDA, was something that we created a couple years ago with a piece of legislation, and the purpose of that body is to move this state forward and to help guide this state as we move forward in the nuclear economy, in developing a nuclear ecosystem in this Commonwealth. And I think it's important for all of you all, even in the rural counties, there are opportunities for economic development related to this. We are taking a very macro approach to this and making sure that we're going to take advantage of all aspects. And part of NEDA is you all will have the ability to apply to be a nuclear-ready community. And there are certain steps that you would have to take to get that designation. There'll be some educational opportunities as far as the city council or county fiscal court to create a proclamation or ordinance stating that, and some other things involved. But when you look at those that are in the industry that are coming into the Commonwealth, when they look for places to locate, that's what they're going to look for. And so understand that those are opportunities for you. And I don't care how small your community is. And as we build, like in Paducah with the enrichment facilities, there will be ancillary businesses that will spring out of that, and service businesses. And so that's going to create a whole ecosystem in Paducah around those facilities, and that's going to continue to grow. And the next session, I'm going to be filing a bill, and we hope to get $150 million allocated towards the advancement of nuclear energy. Representative Bridges has already filed for that request. And then my plan is to use $75 million of that to create a pilot project that would get three different locations in Kentucky, get an early site permitting process done, so we would have three sites in Kentucky prepared to place a nuclear reactor there. We will do that geographically, focusing on eastern Kentucky. Western Kentucky, we've got more of the fuel part of nuclear, and looking at a couple other sites that we have. I have meetings regularly with not just state players in this, but international players. I met with the CEO along with President Stivers in the Senate. We met with the CEO of X Energy just a few weeks ago. They want to come to Kentucky. And so what we're looking at is the state would put up $25 million for a project. And then the utility, and it could be joint utilities that come together, would put up another $25 million. And then the third $25 million, and it's normally around $75 million to get an early site permitting process completed, that would come from a hyperscaler. And a hyperscaler is someone like Google, Amazon. They would put up the other $25 million. So the state, instead of spending $75 million to get one site ready, we can put up $75 million and get three sites ready in this Commonwealth. The numbers, if you run it, the return on investment with our $75 million investment would be it's anticipated to be $30 billion with a B. dollars. And with each region that these nuclear reactors would be placed, understand all the ancillary business that comes with that and all the development that would come with that. So please keep that in mind as you plan for the future. This is the future of energy. And if you pay attention and you do reading, and I read something every day, pretty much every day on nuclear, this is going on all over the world. And United States has to get in front of this. A few years ago, we talked about electric vehicles. We didn't have the electricity generation to power electric vehicles. And then all of a sudden, the data centers popped up, and that's all we talk about now. And it's anticipated that by 2050, we're going to need about 300 nuclear reactors in Wow. this nation to take care of the power demands that we have. So know that it's coming. Nuclear is going to be the baseload source of energy in the future. Along, we will use solar, we will use wind, Every one of those industries has their place as we move forward. And of course, with coal, we want to make sure we utilize that as much and as long as we can for Kentucky. But I'm happy to talk about this with any of you within your districts. If you would like information or someone to come and speak to your council, to your fiscal court, happy to do that. And I'm excited about what this is going to do to our state. And this is an entirely new industry that's coming, and an entirely new economy that's going to boost our state. And everywhere I travel throughout this country, they're talking about Kentucky and what we're doing. And this legislature has been at the forefront of moving that forward. And I think the bills last session all passed unanimously in both chambers. And, you know, in past years, up until 2017, we couldn't get the moratorium lifted. But that's where we are, and that's the support that we have. So take advantage of it as you move forward and be prepared for it. Don't let it get too far down the road before you express your interest and you become a nuclear-ready community. I want to see more development in our part of the state and making sure we're getting our part of this as we move forward.
Thank you. Anybody else? Well, thank you all again for being here with us today, and the support that you all always provide to our organization, to all of our cities and counties and other local governments. Let's give them a round of applause. I do just want to quickly draw your all's attention to the board packet. Not a whole lot in there. However, there are some things that you might want to take notice of. You'll find our monthly clearinghouse report of our projects, the Health and Family Services report, our calendar of events, and then mainly information about the upcoming NATO conference that will be in Washington, D.C. in March. If you are interested, our board members, if you're interested in attending the NATO conference, please let Melissa know ASAP. We will be starting to make those arrangements in the very near future. But just in closing, I want to say thank you all for being here. Thank you for your continued support. And on behalf of all the Pinneral Ad staff there in the back of the room, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and definitely looking forward to the new year. We'll see you all soon. Thank you. We're dismissed.